sets this future Hall of Famer apart?
Passion for the game. Spike, you know the rule. No barking when I'm on TV. Spike!
Spike?
Happen! Spike!
Peyton? Peyton! 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 I'm not gonna yell. We're gonna have a very calm, rational discussion.
Oh, man. So what do you do right there when your 8-year-old daughter, you know, makes an absolute mess, causes damage, and she didn't do it out of, you know, being dishonest. She didn't do it out of disrespect. I mean, Joe in the film here, The Rock, you know, he didn't even know he had an 8-year-old daughter. He shows up on his doorstep one day, and he's trying to figure out how to parent her, but he probably didn't say to her, hey, don't leave the water running. And yet, how do you explain to an 8-year-old, you know, the complications of what you just did? And of course, it'd be absurd to have her pay for it, right? To pay for the mistake that she made. She has no context to that. And so what happens when we find ourselves in that situation right there? When things don't go the way we want, when a mess has been made, and things begin welling up inside of us. Well, that's what we're going to look at this weekend, so we're glad you're here, and it's great to have you join us. For those of you who are joining here in the room, and those of you who are joining at home, wherever you might be joining from online, it's great to have you join us. And just a quick shout-out before we dive into our topic this weekend. Next weekend, I hope you will make every effort to be here at Cross Point or to tune in to one of our services. We're going to do a 1 week on kind of where we've been and where we're going as we continue through this year. It's going to be called Where To Next. And, you know, over the last year, we've really been driven by our mission, but also by our values. So I'm going to talk a bit about how those have informed the things we've been doing. But then also, we're going to be taking a look at what's next. And really, we've adjusted our strategy a bit. And so I want you to come and hear what that looks like, but also so you can consider being a part of it, because the invitation is to be a part of what God continues to do. And so if you call Cross Point home, or if you've been here for the last 15 months, and, you know, it's been a unique season, and you just want to find out more about who this place is and what drives us, we hope you'll join us next weekend for Where To Next. Well, hey, we're wrapping up our series, Parenting the 21st Century, today, and if you're joining us for the first time and you missed any episodes, you can go to our website, or if you're watching online, to whatever you're watching on right now, and all of our previous weekends are right there, and you can catch up. And as we've been pointing out through this series, you know, if you want to look for a good model of family, a good model of parenting, the Bible is not your go-to source. I mean, the Bible is like an encyclopedia of dysfunction, if we're honest. And yet, at the same time, the good news is that Jesus and the authors of the New Testament, they kind of, you know, share this foundation, if you will, with us, that lays a foundation for good parenting. Now, Jesus never, you know, kind of said, you know, hey, here's how you parent, but he did lay a foundation that informs us and helps us have a foundation to raise great kids. And it started when he said something like this. He said, hey, I've got a new command, a new way that I want you to live. And this was a new command. He just simply said, I just want you to love others the way that I, Jesus, have loved you. And you say, okay, well, how do we do that? Well, the Apostle Paul comes along, and he begins to put some handles on this, and he kind of defines what the brand of Jesus love looks like, how the brand of Jesus love behaves, how it behaves under stress, how it behaves in our homes with the people we're closest to. And while many of his kind of handles are threaded all throughout the writings that he gives us in the New Testament, perhaps the best explanation of this Jesus brand of love we find in one of his letters to these new Christians in Corinth. We call it the first letter to the Corinthians. And in this, Paul just gives us this application list. And so we've been unpacking this over the last few weeks. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we only got 3 words in. We got to this right here: love is patient. And then we got stuck. And the reason we got stuck is because this is usually where our parenting gets stuck. We could talk about patience for the rest of the year and still probably not get it right, because this is such a major, major thing. And then we went on and said love is kind. And last week we defined kindness as when you loan someone your strength, when you loan your kids your strength, instead of reminding them of their failures. Paul went on, he says, love does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. And then we spent a good bit of time on this next one: love does not dishonor others. and the importance of mutual respect and honoring in our family context. And, you know, obedience is good. Obedience is a starting place, but that's kind of a low rung on the ladder if that's our only goal. Honor, when we build in a culture of honor, it takes us to an entirely different place. And so today, we're going to kind of pick up on these applications and the rest of the ones that Paul gives, and he starts this next phrase with a similar idea. In fact, here's what he says. He says, love is not self-seeking, meaning love isn't selfish. And this is kind of a theme we've been talking about over these last few weeks. Love puts the needs of others ahead of your own. And let me just say, if we could solve this, this would solve all relational issues. I mean, all of them in this one phrase right here. Now, the Apostle Paul, he connects a few more dots for us right here, and he addresses perhaps the most common expression of self-serving, self-seeking, at least when it comes to the context of relationships and certainly when it comes to parenting. So here's what he says next. He says, love is not easily angered. And here's where we get stuck again, because when we parent, we have a tendency to get angry. Now, I want to break this out a little bit because this is so fascinating. The Greek term for this word easily angered right here is actually a cooking term. It's actually the term to stir or to get stirred up. Now, let me just ask, how many of you have ever had your kids get you stirred up just out of curiosity? I mean, okay, yeah. Just a moment of confession. How many of us have been stirred up in the last week? Yes, I see heads and hands. How many in the last 3 days? I'm like, yes, somebody around me has stirred me up. How about like today? You're stirred up still because something happened, right? Yes. So this is relevant. We all know what this feels like, right? Now think about this. When you're cooking, when you're stirring a pot, what happens? Have you ever thought about this? What happens? It's not a trick question. The things that are in the pot, you know, kind of come to the surface, right? Or if you don't cook, if you've ever used like organic peanut butter, if you've ever opened a jar of like all natural peanut butter, you know, what happens there? I mean, you have to work for it, right? Like you open it up and all the nuts are at the bottom and all the oil's gone to the top and you have to like stir it for what seems like an eternity until the nuts begin to rise to the top, right? And so the point is this, what Paul's talking about right here is when we stir the pot, when we stir the peanut butter, we're not creating or adding anything new to the mix. So what are we doing? We're just surfacing what's already there. Now, I don't know, I know you probably don't want to hear this, but here's the reality here. Our kids do not make us angry. Right? Our kids don't make us angry. Our kids simply stir up and bring to the surface what's already there. And they do it better in us than any other individual in our lives. And so what is it that's already in us? I mean, what's the thing in us that's getting stirred up and coming to the surface? Well, Paul, he already told us. He said it's selfishness. The truth is, you know, no one else has ever made us angry. I mean, they've just stirred us up. Why? Because parenting is so emotional. I mean, when I think about my years of parenting now, almost 19 years, probably my deepest regrets in life come out of some of my parenting moments. In fact, every time we walk through our neighborhood on a certain road or run or ride bikes down this certain road in our neighborhood, I experience all kinds of regret because of something that took place on that road. See, a few years ago, we moved into our current neighborhood, and we moved from a neighborhood right next door to our current neighborhood, and by distance by the roads, it takes about 1.5 miles to get from our old driveway to our current home. But when we lived in our other home, our son played with boys in our neighborhood, and he could walk out the cul-de-sac to the house across the cul-de-sac, through the yard, through the tree line behind their house, and our new neighborhood was right there. So he could just, in a minute, be in the next neighborhood. And so his friend Nick invited him to a birthday party when he was 8, 9 years old. And so, you know, of course, we were late getting out the door and, you know, I'm feeling bad as a dad. I'm like, I don't want to be that loser dad that's showing up late, you know, the dad that can't get his son there on time. And so, you know, we're rushing. And as we're pulling out of the driveway, I say, hey, Matt, I don't have Nick's address. He's like, oh, I know where he lives. I walk there all the time. So we drive around, you know, all the way around the neighborhood and come in the front entrance. I say, okay, Matt, where do we go? He's like, Dad, I don't know. I've never come in this way before. And so I just start driving the neighborhood for 5 minutes and then 10 minutes. I mean, we're doing loops now. And I say, Matt, I was hoping something would jog your memory. Are you seeing something that looks familiar? He's like, no. And all of a sudden, I lose it. I'm like, what do you mean? You told me you knew where you were going. I'm screaming. And he says, Dad, I've never been here before. I come through the backyard and the tree line. And when I look back at that moment, I mean, just this year alone, I think I've apologized like 12 times. Every time we go down that road, I'm like, man, I feel so bad for the way I yelled at you, for the way I treated you. I'm so sorry. And he laughs, and it's okay, Dad. I mean, our deepest regrets oftentimes are about moments when we lost it. I don't think there's anything that's caused me to be more emotional in my life than parenting. Now, why is it? Why is it so emotional? Have you ever wondered that? Have you ever asked yourself that? That's a good question, right? Well, two reasons. Number one, it's because we care. And number two, it's because we're selfish. I mean, Paul tells us this. And by the way, while I'm on this, let me just say, it is so important to talk to our kids about these moments when we have these, you know, emotional moments. All right, because this is the emotional side of life, and this is where EQ gets developed. This is where, emotional intelligence gets developed, where kids begin to understand the emotions they're feeling, why they're feeling them, how they get expressed, how we can manage them. It allows us to show that emotions are not a weakness when we have them. It's actually showing our humanness. In fact, one child psychologist from Yale University School of Medicine, he put it this way. He said, it's scarier for a child to have a parent who is struggling and doesn't talk about it versus a parent who is struggling and does talk about it. And so the point is, age-appropriate conversation about our emotions as we go through life is so, so important. This is where kids learn how to manage their emotions, that it's okay to feel, it's okay to express. And here's the thing, people are going to stir your kids up just like you get stirred up, and they're going to need to know how to handle that. Now, I want to look at something else. Another writer from the New Testament writes right here. And again, I love this guy. He's another one of my favorite writers in the New Testament. Because this is Jesus' younger brother. This is Jesus' brother, James. I mean, think about this. Biological younger brother of Mr. Perfect, right? The guy who never does anything wrong. Every time there's a conflict, who's right in that moment, right? James would have had to understand how to manage his emotions, because I'm sure there were times he just wanted to, you know, let it all out on Jesus. Well, he says something right here that's so practical and so relational. It's probably one of the best things we can take in terms of understanding why we get so stirred up. In fact, here's what James says. He actually asks a question, and then he answers it for us. And so here's this question right here. He says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? That's a good question, right? In other words, what's the source of the conflict? I mean, when you're in your home, when you're with your family, your spouse, your children, what's the source of conflict? Well, I didn't know what you're thinking. Usually it's like, well, it's somebody else, right? Like, if they wouldn't have said it with that tone, or if they would have used different words or behaved differently, I wouldn't have got all stirred up and worked up, right? But we know that's not accurate, because Paul's already told us, no, it's not them. It's actually in you, and it's in me. And so James, he answers the question right here. He says, isn't it true these fights, these quarrels, don't they come from your desires that battle within you? And then he goes on, he says, you desire, but you do not have. You covet, but, and then he's about to give it to you. You ready for it? Here's the reason. Here's the big, huge moment right here. He says, you covet, but you cannot get what you want. So what do? You quarrel and you fight. Man, think about this right here. This is huge. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian, an atheist, if you're exploring faith, if you're not really into Jesus. Man, I tell you what, you take what James says right here. I mean, this just will solve so much in life if we can understand this. I mean, he tells us the source of your anger, the source of your quarreling, the source of your conflicts. He's like, it's simply that you're not getting something we want. I mean, you could be like, mic drop, I'm out. You just like walk away right there. That solves so much right there when we realize this. And parents, understand, I'm not pointing my finger. I'm actually a part of this. I'm like sharing this from experience and from the failures in my own life, because I realize my kids have the ability to bring out sometimes the worst emotion in me. And what I often have to do in that moment is I have to step back, and I kind of begin to have this internal conversation, this internal reflection. And I go, yeah, okay, Kurt, step back. Well, let's be honest. What's going on right here? Why are you so stirred up? Why are you so angry about this moment right here? And if I'm honest, if I'm really honest, like, come on, Kurt, be honest. All right, part of why I feel this way is because I'm not getting what I want. I mean, I want the best for my kids, and they're not going after that. And that's part of it. But the other part of it is I'm not getting what I want, which is their best. Last weekend, I shared with you a moment when I was pushy about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago with one of my daughters. And I was so convicted when I walked out of here on a Thursday night after Mark had kind of taught us the simple love is patient. And all of a sudden, it just came alive for me. All of a sudden, it's like, love is not pushy. Who are you rushing? Who's feeling rushed by you? And I was so convicted because I had been pushy, really pushy, with one of my daughters just a couple days before. And so I kind of just had this internal conversation. I'm like, all right, what was going on right there? What was the issue? And part of it, the thing that started it, was that my daughter was air conditioning the whole neighborhood. All right, she's standing in the door. It's 85. All the AC's going out the door. And I'm like, would you shut the door, please? And she wasn't moving at the pace that I wanted. I'm like, could you just shut the door? And there, she was not moving. So I just kept pushing, would you shut? And I kept getting stronger. But when I think about, okay, what was really there? Part of it was that she was air conditioning the neighborhood. But the other part was I wasn't getting what I wanted right there. Now, was it important that we not air condition the whole neighborhood? Absolutely. Like, I just can't do that, right? But not as important as preserving the relationship. It's not as important as not damaging or damaging her spirit. And so I had to admit that, and I had to own my emotion in that moment. And when I do that, it's like I own a piece of the conflict pie. And the temperature begins to go down, because James is right. Fights, quarrels, they erupt out of what? The simple fact that somebody's not getting what they want, or what they deserve, or what they need, or what they feel entitled to. And so moms and dads, we have to own our piece of the conflict pie. And perhaps one of the best things we can do, I mean, one of the best awareness things we can do is when we begin to feel stirred up, when we begin to feel that internal tension, we go, okay, whoa, let's just stop. And we maybe just need to say it out loud. Just go, okay, hey, can we just stop right here? And can I just say, the reason I'm kind of in angst and feeling so, is because I'm not getting what I want. I just need to call it out. I'm not getting what I want. I don't know that there's a better relational principle that we can show and model and teach our kids. I mean, something that's going to be more important, more helpful in their lives. I mean, think about this. Every conflict that you and I encounter, every conflict they will ever encounter, the reality behind that, a part of that is going to be the problem of I'm just simply right here not getting what I want. I mean, so this is a game changer. If we can just identify that, right? If we can just identify it. And I just want to ask you to reflect on that this week. I mean, it's one of our next steps this week. You might even want to take your device out or hit the next steps button there in the feed and just say, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that this week. I'm going to make this a practice this week. I'm going to call out and reflect. And when I begin to let the tension fill, I feel the tension come. I'm going to go, okay, can we just pause for a moment? I just need to say, I need to admit, I'm not getting what I want. I'm not getting what I want. And I want to manage my emotion. Maybe one of the best things, relationally, that you could ever do. Because love is not self-seeking. Love is not about getting our own way. Consequently, love is not easily angered. And as a result, love actually recognizes what's really going on. So, are you stirred up? Have you been stirred up this week? And can we admit that when we get there, nothing's been added to the concoction. Everything that's coming to the surface is already there. And I just need to recognize, I'm not getting what I want. And I know what you're thinking. And the answer is yes. But Kurt, isn't what I want actually good for them? Probably. Yes, probably. But the emotion and the anger, it stems from you and I not getting what we want. So love is not self-seeking. Love is not easily angered. Here's another way to think of it. When love is not self-seeking, love is not easily angered. All right, Paul goes on. Next thing. He says, love keeps no record of wrongs. This is so, so hard right here, right? Last weekend, we looked at how there's no win in reminding our kids of their failures, right? I mean, they already know that they failed. And think about this. It's a bit of a power play as well, right? I mean, whenever somebody reminds you of your failures, what happens in that moment? Who gets elevated when you get reminded of how you failed in the past? They do, right? I mean, they get into an elevated position over you. But see, in parenting, we're already elevated. We don't need to power up. We don't need to elevate up because we're already in that role. And let's be honest, this is true in marriage as well. Anytime a spouse is reminding a spouse of their failures, it elevates one spouse over the other. It's a power play. And let's be honest, isn't this what God does for us? I mean, doesn't he not power play us? Doesn't he not remind us of our past, but he actually comes up and underneath us in our sin? And lets Jesus actually elevate us so that we can actually re-engage and reconnect? I mean, God models this for us to keep no record of wrongs. Paul goes on. He says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Which this means love loves to catch people doing the right thing. That's what love does. Love doesn't like to catch people doing the wrong thing. And if I'm honest, this is where I have some outages. All right, I mean, just out of curiosity, how many of us have ever found great joy catching someone doing the wrong thing? Like, I caught you. I knew it. I mean, just, you don't have to raise your hand. At home, don't raise your hand. Just sit with your family. Just in your heart, like, have you ever done that? Like, I've done that so many times. Right? You know what happens if you do that? You know what you are? You are normal. That's what you are, because that's the normal response. But let me tell you what it's not. It's not love. In the moments when we catch someone doing something wrong, you know what love does? Love actually sides with them. Love goes, oh my gosh, I hate this for you. I hate that this happened. It doesn't open the filing cabinet. It doesn't remind of the failures. It actually comes alongside and says, hey, I'm going to side with you because I know this is hard. And then there's this one. Love always protects. In other words, love defends. Love stands guard. Love keeps bad things out. And I'm going to be honest with you, knowing how to protect your children is really, really hard. It's been hard for me. I mean, I'm 19 years in, and I still struggle with it. Meaning protecting them from the influence of their peers and how much leeway and how much do I get involved, you know, protecting them from social media and all that's out there, protecting them from all the digital access that is at their fingertips every single day. I mean, it is a hard balance to say, how do I do the appropriate protecting without becoming a helicopter parent? I mean, and here's what I'll tell you. Here's what I've discovered. You're not going to get this exactly right. You're just not. All right, I don't even know that it's possible to get this exactly right. It's a constant dance of implementation. Okay, how'd that go? A little reflection. Okay, let me make some adjustments. All right, implementation, a little reflection, and some adjustments. And so here's kind of my one suggestion on this. I would suggest you err on the side of too much protection rather than too little, because you can then release your grip slowly. Now, if you're an educator, you get this, all right? If you've ever started a school year with a group of children in your classroom, you understand that it's always easier to give more freedom down the road than to rein it back in, all right? But for those of us that aren't, understand this is so important. Which by the way, freedom, let's talk about freedom for a moment with students. You know, freedom should have very little to do with age and mostly to do with responsibility and maturity. And this is going to be so hard for your students to understand, just like it was hard for you and I to understand when we were their age. I mean, think about it. Everybody gets a learner's permit in our state, at least at what, 15, right? 15 years old, whoo, get a learner's permit, right? Wrong, no. Mom and dad, you get to choose. All right, you get to choose. Just because there's a date on the calendar doesn't mean it should happen. I mean, you get to choose on this. All right, this is a moment where you get to decide, okay, are they mature enough to begin to drive? Are they mature enough? Are they showing enough responsibility? And let me just tell you this, it's okay for them to not be happy with you in the short term. All right, let me say that one more time. It's okay, parents, for your kids to not be happy with you in the short term. It doesn't mean you're a bad parent. What it probably means is that you love your son or daughter more than you love the approval of your son and daughter. And if I'm honest, sometimes love, at least to our kids, looks like the enemy. I mean, you might feel like, man, you're the worst thing ever. But mom and dad, that's okay, because love always, it always, always protects. And sometimes it has to protect fiercely. Now, as we wrap up this series, we've given all these handles on what love looks like. And so I want to kind of bring it back full circle for a moment. I just want to remind you, there are no perfect parents, in case you're wondering if you're feeling bad about anything we've talked about. No perfect parents. And it's a good thing, right? And there's no perfect kids, and there's no perfect families. And that's a good thing, because if you had perfect kids, they probably wouldn't want to spend too much time with you as an imperfect parent or all their siblings who are also imperfect. So it's actually a good thing. So I want to leave you with this question right here. I want you to think about this. Would you rather have perfectly obedient children who never cause you a moment of trouble, but don't enjoy being with you? Or would you rather have a typical child or typical children who got in typical trouble, who created typical sleepless nights for a season or two or five or even 10, but at the end, they enjoyed being with you and want to be with you when they have the chance to choose? Now see, I think most of us would choose the healthy relationship over the perfect behavior. And think about this for a moment. Isn't this what our Heavenly Father does for us? And thank God he doesn't expect a perfect behavior on our behalf. He actually cultivates a healthy relationship with us in spite of our behavior. And so if I could boil everything down that we've talked about over the last 5 weeks to kind of one North Star, one central idea, it'd be this. I want to encourage you to parent toward a healthy adult relationship with your children. This is the long game. And you might have 3-year-olds, and you may have 5-year-olds, you may have an 18-month-old. I want you to think through, what does it mean to parent toward healthy adult relationships with your children? Now, let me tell you, this came into sharp focus a number of years ago, when we first had our first child, which is almost 19 years ago tomorrow. And Julie and I, we both came from good families. We appreciate our upbringing. They were similar in some ways. They were very different in other ways. There was dysfunction. We weren't perfect. My parents went through a divorce. That created all kinds of interesting dynamics, still does. Julie's parents were together till the end, but there was still a lot of unique dynamics and some dysfunction. And so we just decided, when we first started, you know, being responsible for a child, we're going to play the long game, and we're going to do our absolute best to create a culture for our children that not only do they want to be in now, but they want to be with us when they get to the point in their lives where they don't have to anymore. And I'm going to tell you something, it's been hard. And we haven't always done the right thing, and we've had to go back and adjust and readjust and do things different. But I can tell you the coolest thing is it's beginning to happen. I mean, as our kids are getting older, as they've entered the teen years and entered college, and they're moving into adulthood, and they now have more freedom to not be at home as much as, you know, they were when they were younger, they continue to want to be around us. And we just look around, we're like, oh my gosh, it's happening. I mean, they'll come down, they're like, what are we doing for dinner tonight? I'm like, well, are you going out with your friends? Well, yeah, but I mean, I want to make sure I don't miss, like, dinner. Well, what are we doing? What are we doing this weekend? Well, are you going out? Well, I'm going out, but I want to make sure I'm not scheduling over, you know, whatever we're doing. Where are we going on vacation? You know, I mean, it's happening when they're beginning to see this freedom that they have, they're choosing. I mean, this is the long game. And keeping this in front of us over the last number of years has kind of been our North Star, and it's put guardrails, if you will, in our lives. It's put guardrails in terms of how we use our time. It's put guardrails in terms of, you know, how we, you know, have family rhythms and certain protections that we put in place for them. And, you know, guardrails even when it comes to discipline, and even the spirit in which we discipline. And it's why honoring and kindness and patience and putting others first and trying to love others, not just the way we want to be treated, but let's love them with the way Jesus loved us. It's something we've always strived for. And I'm going to tell you, have we always got it right? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. There are so many apologies that have happened along the way. I mean, let me assure you, and this dad right here, I can certainly power up, and I can be like, I'm the dad, and here's how it's going to go, and I can be pushy. It's all in there. I mean, when that pot gets stirred, it all begins to come to the surface, and there's times where it spills out and into the lives of the ones I love the most. And then I have to apologize. But isn't that the point? I mean, what's an apology? An apology is a sign of a favored relationship. It's a relationship builder. It's a relationship restorer. It's a sign of a mutually satisfying relationship. And so we've just tried to do our best to parent with our future adult relationships in mind. We've played the long game. And let me tell you something we haven't done. And what we haven't done is we've not had not goals. You know what not goals are? Anybody, you might have not goals. Not goals are when you go, okay, you know, I am not going to create the kind of family my parents created. I am not going to discipline the way my dad disciplined. I am not going to parent like my parents. Those are not goals. And let me tell you why we haven't had not goals. And this is a trap that so many young families fall into. I do not want to experience what I experienced growing up. See, the problem with not goals is they're not goals. They're not inspiring, they're not enough, and they're not relational. And what they cause us to do is overcorrect and let the pendulum swing so far the other way because we're so trying to not have something happen, we lose sight of the very thing we want to happen. So, man, I just encourage you to make your future goal, your North Star. How do I cultivate healthy adult relationships as the ultimate goal for my kids? But you see, here's the thing, and you know this. But once your kids leave home, the health of your relationship with your kids will be the determining factor that will determine the degree that they want to be with you or even want to be like you. Let me say again, it's hard work. It is so hard. In fact, I want to close telling you a story that I just heard this week. And I think it'll be encouraging to you as encouraging to me. It's from one of my favorite pastors. I listen to this podcast with Dr. Andy Stanley. He's got a leadership podcast. And in fact, he's responsible for much of what we've been sharing with you during this series. I mean, he's just a phenomenal theologian. And he was talking in this podcast about his dad, story about his dad. And his dad is 89 years old, and his dad was still pastoring up to early this year. 89 years old, still a senior pastor at First Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. He'd been there for 51 years. And so he decided to retire earlier this year at the age of 89. And he says to his son, he says, Andy, he says, I want to try to find somebody who has a few more years on me and a little more experience because I've got a question I want to ask them. And Andy talked about how he looked at his dad. He said, Dad, I don't know that there's anybody still in our profession older than you. I mean, you've lasted longer than most people. And I don't know that there's anybody that has more experience than you. I mean, you've been incredibly successful. But if we could find that person, what would you like to ask him? Like, what's your one question? He said, well, I just want to know, does it ever get any easier? Wow, there's a guy at 89 years old that's been building people his whole life, developing people. And he wants to know, does it get any easier? And the answer, we know what it is. It's no, it doesn't. And so in your parenting, if it's hard, if you feel like I'm wondering if it's going to get easier, am I doing the right thing? Let me just tell you, if it feels hard, you're probably doing it right. But I want you to consider this. Perhaps the most significant thing you do, it may not be something you do, but it may be someone that you raise. That's the goal. So let's stand. I'm going to pray for us. We're going to sing one more song. We'll send you out here. Heavenly Father, man, thank you for the privilege of influencing another human being. As parents, as uncles, as aunts, as grandparents, as mentors, I just pray that you help us to keep the long game in mind. I mean, parenting's hard. It's hard. Some of us are sitting here and we're tired. We may have been dozing off because it's been a day. And yet, God, I just pray that you will help us to not lose sight of these foundations that you broke out for us of how love behaves, what it looks like, because we know these are the foundations that will create and bring out the greatness in those that we're raising and those that we're leading. And so I just pray that you give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've heard. And as you know, God, there's no perfect parents. And so I just pray that your grace would wash over every single person in earshot of my voice right now. God, that your grace would wash over us and that as we seek to restore and we seek to build in, Father, that you would just cover our mistakes because we know it's never too late to start. And God, we thank you that you're a God who does the same with us, that doesn't expect us to be perfect, but you want there to be a healthy relationship. And that in spite of our sin, in spite of ourselves, you came underneath and lifted us up so that we could be restored to you, and we thank you for that. And so we just thank you for parenting us in this way. And we just pray all these things in the character of Jesus, our Savior.